This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday. May the 3rd be with you. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half are your responsibility. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're happy and content. How's everybody doing?
Good.
It was a nice day yesterday. It was a little overcast, but, you know, it was warm. Saturday was very nice.
I'd just like to take a moment for us to appreciate how low the bar has gotten for our good weather meter. Have you guys noticed that?
No.
Like, we're so comfortable with climate change that people were running around on Saturday like, oh, my God, can you believe it? It's outside weather. It was May 1st, and it was like 58 degrees. It was not great.
Yeah, I loved it.
I think we now appreciate the outdoors more than ever.
You know what? Well put, Don.
Well, that's great, and that's a real positive spin. And I enjoyed the day. I went to Long Beach. I went to Coney Island Saturday night. I had a great time.
A lot of baseball card shops.
You know, I did not have any time for baseball cards.
Good.
Isn't that sad?
I know. It's good. You've got to break out of this.
Because whenever he gets to the burbs, Michael, he seems to be motivated by, you know, his version of, like, sports Bitcoin.
Right. It's either, well, cards or records. It's all my worthless Bitcoin.
I like to call it cryptocurrency.
Yeah. That's...
Or there's another word that rhymes with bit that could also work in this situation.
I did have a great weekend. Well, good. You deserve it.
So do you.
I don't really. But anyway, we'll get into the draft and how it ended up for the Jets and the Giants. We'll have Dan Orlovsky on later. We're going to have on Joe Douglas. I believe we're also going to have on Hall of Fame-bound Joe Judge. So that's good as well. But we do start off today with baseball, which leads us to Diamond Oats on the Michael K. Show, brought to you by 2x London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Well, ESPN had quite a game yesterday, the Mets and the Phillies, and that was quite a series. There was a lot of animosity, which I love, a lot of hard feelings, which I love, and then it ended in a controversial way. Now, I didn't know how Don felt about this till Andrew just told me.
I still don't know.
But I thought they got the call right. I thought it went off the railing, and that Rhys Hoskins should be at second. That made it 8-7 rather than 8-8. And then Familia comes in and strikes out Harper to end the game and give the Mets a very wild and wacky 8-7 victory. But, Don, I found out that you feel shockingly differently.
Well, no, I don't think it's definitive by any stretch of the imagination, but at first blush, I thought it hit the seats. And when I looked at the replay, and I'm showing it now on Yes, it felt like the way it hopped, that it felt like it might have hit the seats. So I was pleasantly surprised, Michael, when they reversed it, because I thought they were just going to fall on the whole inconclusive. But, you know, Andrew made a good point. That's rounded. It's not square. It just took that, like, funny hop. They're just really slowing it down now on Yes over and over again. So I could... They probably did get it right. I was just a little surprised that they were so 100% to overturn it, because the original call was home run. And you know in sports, Michael, you need, like, it's got to be like 1,000% to overturn it, especially in a big moment like that. But it benefited the Mets, but I was still surprised that they said it was conclusive that it hit.
Yeah, usually the call that's made really has to have overwhelming evidence to turn it.
But I think it's overwhelming.
So did I. So did I.
It doesn't hit the seat. It bounced back onto the field. Like, that's that. I think if it hit the seat,
it wouldn't have bounced back on the field. I think it might have bounced around and
oh, no, no.
The inside
Michael,
the fence.
The only way it would have bounced back from hitting a seat is if it hit perfectly on the top, but even then it wouldn't have been likely to get back on the field. It's just, I understand why you take a few minutes to look at it, of course, but you know, this isn't one of those situations where replay doesn't do its intended effect. This is exactly the intended effect of replay. It wasn't a home run.
Now let's bring in a Philly fan Andrew, what did you think?
I thought it was definitive that it hit the railing, that it did not go out. The first, I mean, it took a couple times of seeing it. You know, they had to get, like, the right view and really slow it down frame by frame. But I think that they got it right, unfortunately for me.
Not funny,
yeah,
because
probably right. Right now, I think Yes did a tremendous job of just the over and over and over again, which is obviously the way they look at it back in Chelsea. So, hey, listen, they got it right. I can understand Hoskins get flipping out the way he did because, you know, you think you got a game-tying home run. And the way Harper is right now with his wrist didn't really stand much of a chance against Familia. At least it didn't look like it in that at-bat. But, hey, the Mets needed a break and they got it. But all that still happened, Michael, right? Like, Diaz still blew the lead. It took replay to have it not completely blow the lead, but now he's hurt. Why he came in the second game in a row when it's a non-save situation, now making him unavailable today even if he didn't get himself hurt, is a little strange. So you win a game, but you still walk away from it like, oh, God, man. What? I was like giving birth last night. It's like, why is it this hard?
I thought they were going to lose the game. And, you know, Hoskins is right in the middle of everything. Because a line drive hit to him should have been an inning-ante double play. It got past him.
Yeah.
And caused that weird play. And, then, you know, I give the Mets credit for their grittiness and then the big hit for Pete Alonso that really looked at the time like it blew it open, but it didn't. But nothing comes easy for this Met team, Don.
No.
Nothing. Nothing comes easy.
But every time they play for the foreseeable future is like opening day because everybody's in the same boat. They're tied for first place at 500, right? So there's no ground to make up. Now you could say they're blowing opportunities to have first place by themselves and building a lead with everybody else being average, but with them being very average themselves, Michael, it's like opening day every day. We get the you get to hit the reset button, right? You're starting from scratch. Everybody's 0-0, like everybody's 14-14. So they once they kind of figure it out, they should be okay. It's just when exactly is that going to happen, and when is Lindor going to hit? Forget about the booing, Michael. He's batting 171, whatever it is. It's bad.
Yep,
it's really bad.
I really, if you look at that division, though. I think it could be 88 wins to win the division.
Easily.
And I think you could be looking at a situation where, you know, most of these teams are going to be close to or under 500 all year. Because I said this at the beginning of the season. They're going to cannibalize each other. I mean, they all play each other 19 times. And, you know, they'll be 10-9, 9-10, you know, 11-8, it's going to be that sort of deal because I don't think there's any great separation. Now, the Braves suffered a big loss yesterday. Travis d'Arnaud out for a couple of months with a broken thumb. They've got pitchers that are out as well. But you look at the run differential throughout the entire division. Wow. And now the Giants are playing well. Maybe the division doesn't even make a wild card. Maybe it doesn't even have a wild card coming out of it because they're going to cannibalize each other. So, if the division is won with 88 or 89 games and the second place team is 86 or 87 wins,
right, yeah,
that might not be the wild card.
That's a great point because I was just spinning a positive that this is such a winnable division. But the negative of that is that
that
might
win.
Be your only opportunity to make the playoffs. You're right because yep. St. Louis is four over, right? So you know San Diego is going to be there. I got to see them a lot this weekend. That's a really good team. Yeah. That's a really good team. And Darvish looks like he's back. So they've got a really good team. And the Giants are in first place, and that's a shock, six games over. You know, so and they're all going to beat up on Colorado that's probably on their way to, you know, maybe losing 100 games this year. So, yeah, if San Francisco and San Diego are going to be in this and St. Louis is going to be in this and the Reds are a pretty good team, Michael, that I think could figure it out. They're a game under 500. Yeah, this – The East might only offer a division champion, and that's it.
And as for Lindor, you know, you spoke about him. He had a couple of opportunities to have that seminal moment where, you know, he becomes the Met. And he made it out one time, and he walked the other time. So it's being set up for him. He's just not getting it done at this point. I still believe in him. You know how I feel about him, Don. I think he will hit. I think there's probably more pressure as he continues to travel on the interstate. and it's on May 3rd already. We'll see how he does in these four games against the Cardinals, but he's just too talented. The one thing I don't like, now I was looking up some advanced stats, the ball's not coming off his bat real well. You know, he doesn't have a lot of hard-hit balls. So if he's not barreling up, that's a little bit of a cause for concern, but I still think he's a tremendous player.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's hitting in bad luck, Michael. He's just not hitting.
No, he's not hitting.
And is 22 games enough to be concerned? I don't know. I mean, we've seen Mark Teixeira made a living out of starting slowly in April, right? And then firing himself up. So I didn't see enough of Lindor to know how he usually starts.
But he doesn't get off to great starts, but not this bad.
But, you know, and then, you know, we talk about this with the Yankees, too. It's not just the first month of the season, Michael. He wasn't great last year either. You know, so it's probably just, you know, a change of scenery here, you know, getting used to the National League pitching, although I don't know how big a deal that is with, you know, 100% interleague play for the last few years. But still, there's adjustments to ballparks, adjustment to a new city and all that. But so I'm not going to give up on him, but 171 with one homer and three RBI through 22 games is not what you want. And that stat, yes, is showing now. Runners in scoring position, 1-for-16. And I think the one hit, Michael, if I'm not mistaken, was a couple of weeks ago in Colorado, which I thought was his seminal moment, right? That was when the Mets scored all those runs in the seventh to bail out DeGrom when it looked like he was going to get tagged with a loss. But then and that was a couple of weeks ago, and that still never turned it around.
Now, I thought about this one thing, too. You know, I was looking around Citizens Bank Park last night, and it was a pretty decent crowd. I don't know what the percentage is in Pennsylvania, but it looks like it's way more than 20%. Almost like it was 50%. Andrew, do you know the total that they allow in Philly?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's 50, though.
But it looked like a large crowd. But anyway, for a Met-Philly game on a Sunday night, if the world was normal, that place is jammed. Mm-hmm. And I think that somebody stands up, and it doesn't even look like they're reaching over the railing, and they catch that ball or at least put their hand on it. I don't think it's going to be called interference. I just don't. And it shows you all the things that line up and happenstance and fortune, because if there are people in that seat right by that railing, they're touching that baseball. And at that point, I don't think that you could turn that around and say that, well, that was interference.
Yeah.
Because it was, what, an eighth of an inch away from going into the seats? It hit the top of the railing. So if there's a crowd there, still doesn't mean the Mets lose. It's 8-8. But the Phillies have a better chance, yeah. I would think, because they'll probably force extra innings. The ghost runner, the carnival act, the whole deal comes into play.
And I was thinking about this, Michael, and I know that's the quaintness of baseball, of the ballparks have their own little idiosyncrasies and stuff. That's why you have ground rules. You go over it. But that's an important moment in that game, obviously. And as you said, if that's a full building, there's fans there reaching over, and there's probably not enough to say if it was interference or not. Why is that the case? Can't you put something together where it's not railing, that it's not something where a fan can lean over and grab it? I know it's all about jamming as many people in, but you're talking about something that's pretty important, right? And you shouldn't have... It should be pretty easy to determine whether it's a home run or not. I mean, you got some ballparks, Michael, where it's a line, right? It's a painted line because of the one wall's bigger than the other wall and the design. And I know you want to try to make it all kind of different, but no other sport's like that. A touchdown's a touchdown. A goal's a goal. You know, everything's standard, but baseball, it's not standard. Can you put something up there where it's a little easier to determine whether it's out or not?
It's weird because they want to have fans close to the action. And once you do that, then you set up that problem. And also in Philly, with a four-man umpiring crew, it's not fair. You almost have to have a postseason umpiring crew where the guy down the lines to be close. You can't expect an umpire in real time to make that call.
No, you're right. And why can't you have a camera that's down the fence to be able to determine that, right? All the technology
it seems so easy.
Right. It's an easy thing to do, Peter, right? In those situations, then if you had a camera right down there, you'd be easily able to tell whether it hit. Because we could say that there's some question to the angle that they had, but if they had an angle that was right down the line of the fence, it would be easy to see.
Probably money. Probably comes down to money.
I'm being told 25% from our resident expert, Kofi, in Pennsylvania. 25%.
It looked like more than that.
Well, just a shade under 11,000 was the attendance last night. Right. 10,900 and something. And we had 51,000 people at the Derby Saturday, right?
Yep.
That was technically the biggest crowd during the pandemic.
And I think, what, the Indy 500 is going to be 125,000 people?
Wow.
I read somewhere, so.
How much does Indy hold?
I think it's like, what, 250? Something like that?
Yeah, so they're they're working, yeah, so I guess they're working at
50.
No. 50%. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Wow.
So I guess it's 50.
That was something.
Yeah, that was something. Troubling right there.
That math right
I'm
there.
I'm not a math
something.
Guy.
No.
No, we can tell.
That was just me trying to remember what was originally said, Peter. That's not me not really knowing math. It's me just not being able to retain information.
I was making an argument.
So make fun of my stupidity, but just get it right.
Right. That's fair.
let's talk about the Yankee weekend.
Why?
Well, I don't want to – I'm not a pouring cold water on excitement sort of guy. But although there were things that you really take out of that weekend and you go, well, that's good. Like the way Kluber pitched yesterday was really good. Really good. And if he has a changeup like that the rest of the way, he's going to get a lot of people out. And that's going to be something that 2 weeks ago, Yankee Universe calling in screaming, why did the Yankees even take a chance on this guy? That other teams will get yelled at. Why didn't you take a chance on this guy? But the one caveat I want to throw into it. Boy, the Tigers were dreadful.
Yeah. That's
and Don said this on Friday. And now in retrospect, he couldn't have been more right. You have to sweep that series. If you don't sweep that series, shame on you. That's one of the worst teams I've seen in a long time. And the Yankees did what they had to do. They swept them. Now, they beat them up on Friday, 10-0, 5 home runs. Then they outlast them on Saturday, 6-4, no home runs. And then they outpitch them yesterday, 2-0, also no home runs. Those are the first two games they've won this year in games where they didn't home run. So that's 2-7 in those games. And that's important. And it shows you that the pitching is better. And although I want to get excited about Tyone's outing, where he got his first win in exactly two calendar years on Saturday, and I want to get excited about Kluber, I find myself pulling back just a little bit, guys, because the Tiger lineup is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're so bad. And Miguel Cabrera is, unfortunately, a shadow of what he once was. How do you gauge it? How do you get excited? I mean, when a guy like David Cohn tells me the shape of Kluber's pitches are outstanding, then that makes me appreciate more of the outing. But getting out the Tigers doesn't really do much for me because they're so bad.
See, that's what I mean, obviously the 10-0, that's exactly what you should do. But the 6-4 and 2-0, Michael, were like, why are they one poor pitch away from maybe losing this game, you know? But I don't want to evaluate. Win's a win. And probably the best news over the weekend is the Red Sox dropped 3 of 4 from Texas. So now you're only two back in the loss column.
Yep.
So despite being a 500 team, like the Mets, nobody's running and hiding. You're only two back of Boston. You haven't even played them yet, you know. But I kind of felt that way going into this series. Like, what do you do? If you beat them pillar to post while you're supposed to, and God forbid you lose a game, you're going to get destroyed. It's a no-win situation. That's how bad the Tigers are. But they did what they had to do. But I don't know if they're okay. I don't know if things are better. Or are they just a team that, you know, yeah, the Tigers are gonna lose 100 games easy this year.
I would say so.
I don't know what you take from it other than, all right, we got our three wins. Red Sox lost 3 out of 4. Let's go get them.
Now, something happened on Saturday, which I addressed a little bit on the game. I think people are tired of hearing about it. And I am truly tired of talking about it.
All right.
But Giancarlo Stanton had an 8-game hitting streak. He had 3 straight games, Peter, where he had 3 hits each game. Mm-hmm. Coming out of Friday's game. And Saturday, that was the day to rest him. I don't get it. I will never get it. And I promise at some point I'm going to stop talking about it. And also Gio Urshela, who's been one of the hottest Yankees, it was also his day to rest. So there's nothing taken in context in terms of how hot a guy is. I mean, they could tell me they don't believe in hot, but if there was nothing wrong with Stanton and there was nothing wrong with Urshela and you still rested them on Saturday, then you don't believe in hot. And listen, that's your choice if you're an analytic guy. You don't believe in hot. I think you're wrong, but you don't believe in hot. Because if you believed in hot, there's no way that you would sit down a guy who's had three straight games with three straight hits. It just doesn't make sense. And they win the game 6-4. So they got away with it because the Tigers are so bad. But my question would be, what was the insistence on resting them that day when today's a day off? I don't get it. I don't get it. Nobody can explain it to me. It makes no sense. Now, if they know injury stuff and they keep it a secret, well, that's one thing. But I'm sorry. I can't apologize for me questioning it unless that's known to us. Because I'm just assuming they're healthy. And boy, what a grind it's been. I've got to give them a day off each week. I'm not giving Stanton a day off until he goes hitless one day. Now, he played yesterday, got one hit, so he has a 9-game hitting streak. And yesterday was Gleyber Torres' day to rest. I just don't get it. I never, ever will get it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. At least with Judge, when they're sitting him out these 2 days, they're saying, you know, there's a lower body stuff.
Right. We can be annoyed that he's always hurt, but we know that he's hurt.
Right. We know there's something awry. With Stanton, nothing. Just that was his day. We've planned this day. Wow. Just wow. Again, I don't know where to go with this other than to repeat myself over and over again. And the people in the Yankee front offices must be laughing at me. And I know Yankee fans feel the same way. Well, it doesn't make sense to bench a guy who has three hits in his last three games. Three hits each game. It doesn't make sense. Has an 8-game hitting streak. Hitting over 400 during that time, and every ball he hits is about 115 miles an hour. He had to rest on Saturday. Beyond me.
But I know you're sick of talking about it, Michael, but people are really getting frustrated over it. And I know it probably helps them win. Forget about the analytics of it. They look at it and say, we believe that Stanton at 130 games is better than Stanton at 162. He just doesn't have the body type to play every single day. Can't do it. Physically can't do it. All right? But that doesn't help the sport. Right? Because as much as the Yankee fans get on him and they're disgusted how much money he makes, when he hits a ball, people want to see it. Because he hits it far and he hits it loud, and people want to see that. And baseball does not benefit from their stars sitting on the bench. It doesn't. So all of this conversation, inner workings, this helps us win, that's great. But on a day-in, day-out basis, you're ticking your fan base off. You are. Because I've seen it. I'm a hockey fan. I know. Nobody abuses the sport more than the fans of the sport. And for a long time, when hockey was in that dead puck era, the left wing lock, the trap, there was no scoring. Like, fans were getting annoyed. Right? And I'm seeing the same thing from baseball. Michael, you see it on social media. Every time something goes wrong with baseball, typical baseball, they're in that realm now. Like what happened in the Met-Philly series with the base runner out of the baseline. Awful call. Yeah, the umpire doesn't just get abused. Like, baseball gets abused. Typical baseball. Can't get out of their own way. Baseball doesn't know what they're doing. Do you want your fan base to be alienated by these decisions? Because that's what's happening. People are disgusted right now with this sport.
I've said this before. The guys that run teams, that can't be their worry. Their worry is to try to make the team the best it can be, okay? And I know what you're saying. But my rebuttal would be, I believe that you don't push Stanton to play 155 games. I believe that. You've got me. I understand it. But why on that day? Why didn't you let him ride out the streak and then rest him after that? Why did it have to be that day? So it shows everything is pre-planned. And any time that Aaron Boone gives me pushback, well, we kind of believe in hot. No, you don't. Unless Stanton was hurt secretly, you don't believe in hot. You sat down a guy on an 8-game hitting streak who had three hits in each of the last three games. You don't believe in hot. So my point is, yes, I understand the value of resting them. I understand the value of not having them play 155 games. But why don't you wait until they cool down? Alex Rodriguez, who finished his career with 696 home runs, told me, and has told me several times, anybody who doesn't believe in hot has never played the game. And I'm telling you why they don't believe in hot. Because it can't be quantified. Anything that can't be quantified does not exist in this world. And that, to me, is troubling.
But But that doesn't even make any sense either. What do you mean it can't be quantified? If the guy's 8 for 8, or he's got a hit in 8 consecutive games, then you play him.
Well, here's what they say, Don, by not being quantified. If you play, if Giancarlo Stanton plays an entire 150 game slate, he's going to finish with 50 home runs and 120, and I'm making these numbers up, 125 ribbies, and he's going to hit 271. Doesn't matter how you parcel out those 150. Doesn't matter. If 150, those will be the numbers. So they don't believe that you have to compile the numbers when you're hot, because but if you put him back in the lineup and he cools down, he will eventually get to those numbers. I say, why not ride that pony? Why not ride it? To me, you're right, Don. That's quantifiable. 3 hits a game, that's hot. I want to see how hot he could stay.
But again, it's such a slave to the numbers, because it's forget about whether you've ever played baseball, okay? It's, have you ever breathed? Have you ever walked the face of the earth?
I have.
All right? Because if you have, and I think Peter is with me here, there are good days and there are bad days.
No.
And there's some days where you're feeling it. You know, whether I'm doing play-by-play, a talk show, whether Peter's doing his wrestling, whether he's doing a podcast, Michael, you doing play-by-play show, they just feel it. Like everything's just coming together. And then there's some days where it's not coming together for you. When a player is quote-unquote hot, all right, here's how you quantify it. He's feeling it right now. His confidence is built up. Ride it. Right, because the day's going to come where it's going to disappear and the tank's going to be on empty, and then you're going to have to sit down and figure it out again. But every once in a while, whether it's a gambler in Vegas, whether it's a plumber, whatever it is, it's just there are certain days you're seeing
nothing's
it, you're
right.
Feeling a little better. Peter, that's when you have to write it, because it doesn't last forever.
So you suggesting right now to me on this radio show that the Knicks are not just – coincidentally playing good basketball at this point in the year, though that's part of it, but they're also hot. They're also feeling it. They're in a zone, because one win begets another win. Confidence begets more confidence.
That's the thing. That's the word. Is confidence.
Begets? Oh, I thought begets.
I like that too.
Thank
but
you.
Confidence. Because, you know, sometimes, whether it's asking a girl out on a date, whether it's just driving down the highway, there's certain days where you just... The thing I'm saying, the feel it, the it factor here is that there's confidence. There's a belief that you could do and accomplish anything. And that confidence is very easily shaken and taken away. And so that one day off where you're not playing, they think you're storing the confidence in a freezer someplace to be thought out for the next day. No, it doesn't work that way. Because when the confidence is gone, God knows when you get it back.
All right, those are Diamond Notes, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. 3 o'clock, Dan Orlovsky. 5 o'clock, Jets GM Joe Douglas. I believe 4:50, it'll be Joe Judge, the head coach. 5:30 now? Is it 5:30, Joe Judge? That's great.
That's Andrew doing the job.
Yeah,
that's 4:50.
His job.
4:50 is not a good time.
No, he's a 5:30 guy, let's be honest, because he's going to Canton. You've heard me say that.
Not today, but
eventually. All right, you know the number. We'll get your phone calls, talk about everything we just hit. We still have to talk about the Knicks as well. As Peter said, they have been, in a word, amazing. 1-800-919-3776. Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So Governor Phil Murphy of Jersey said, shot in a beer, that if you get a vaccination, a COVID vaccination, and you have proof of it, and then you take it to a bar, you'll get a free beer. So I wonder if it still applies, Don, for you.
I'm good. I can get my own beer. Well, it's weird, but whatever gets it done, I guess, right? It is weird.
It's just a little cute incentive, and, you know, shot in a beer is a phrase.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
But so you think because now I could just go?
Yeah,
go
I wonder if it's like grandfathered in for those that did it without an incentive.
It could be. I'd have to get a list of the participating pubs and liquor stores that do that. And
I think
go
you
in
should.
And get my free beer.
Daniel in Union. Daniel.
Hey there.
Hey, guys. What's up?
How you doing?
Good. So I have 2 points about the Mets. My first point is, if these front office guys are so smart, and the managers are so smart, why would you do something as boneheaded as bringing in Diaz in the ninth inning? Any person who's watched the Mets knows he's terrible on back-to-back days, and there's no reason to bring him in there. My second point is, you know, the Yankees have something in common. They have the two best pitchers in baseball. But you want to know what else they have in common? They have the two worst contracts in baseball, Giancarlo Stanton and Lindor. Next year, Lindor is going to make $3 million less than Mike Trout. Mike Trout is hitting 400. Lindor is hitting 187. Michael, when you allocate your resources to one player, it hurts the rest of the team. That's why the New York Yankees starting lineup is so, or starting pitching is so questionable. If Lindor does not perform nearly as good as Mike Trout, he's a bust. I don't care if he hits 300.
But
he needs to hit more than 300, and he's hitting 187.
But you can't. I see what you're doing, Daniel. But you know, Mike Trout's contract was signed a couple of years ago, and things progress, and you know, Tatis set a new limit, so then Lindor sets a new one after that. But to say that Giancarlo Stanton is one of the two worst contracts in baseball, that's just wrong. And I'm not saying that because he has a 9-game hitting streak. You know what the Yankees pay for Giancarlo Stanton? $24 million. That's after what the Marlins kicked in and the money that they got rid of. $24 million for that guy, if he stays healthy, is not an onerous contract at all. At all.
Well, the problem with his contract, it is clearly affected their pursuit of other players. At least
that's
in the
because
eyes
they've
of fans.
Set a limit on their salaries.
Well,
on
that,
the payroll.
And that frustrates fans because then they blame Stanton for that. You're right. I mean, we could talk all we want about him not living up to expectations, but there are worse contracts in baseball. There's no question. But they look at it and say, well, you know, maybe we could have went out and got other players. We're sitting here working on a budget specifically because of the money that they're paying Stanton because of that contract. But come on, we're talking 22 games with Lindor, okay? Now, if you want to say they didn't get Springer because they were going to commit that money to Lindor, I understand your frustration. But we don't have a history here with the Mets that Lindor is strangling them financially. Matter of fact, the contrary. It looks like Cohen's got money. He looks like he's willing to spend over the luxury tax. So Lindor is not hurting them financially in other places. Where
I think
you can make the case Stanton is with the Yankees.
They were locked into getting Lindor. Fell into the perfect situation. It was the first big move by Steve Cohen. They had to sign him.
He was making a big move.
Right. He was good. Somehow, you know, that's why I tried to get Bauer. If they got Bauer, they probably don't sign Lindor. They probably just let him play it out. So this was preordained the moment they got him. And Steve Cohen had to make a splash to show everybody, I'm not Fred and Jeff and Saul.
And listen, it was going to delay the inevitable anyway, because if they didn't trade for Lindor, then this offseason they would have spent similar money on one of the other free agent shortstops. So that money was going to go to the shortstop position regardless, right? Because they probably would give Trevor Story a similar contract.
In all likelihood.
Yeah, you know, so...
I'm sorry. If you want to get upset, get upset. It's 22 games. You guys are burying the guy already? It's 22 games.
Now, as far as the Diaz thing, I'm with him. I don't know why Diaz came in.
I guess they don't trust anybody else. You think they want to bring in Familiar with a 4-run lead in that ballpark?
All right, but guess what? You end up having to bring him in anyway.
Right. But they didn't think they would.
It's a non-save situation. Great. He had pitched the day before. And here's the thing. It's not even about he's terrible in back-to-back situations. It's this whole idea of a clean inning. You know, you're my closer. I have to bend over backwards to make sure that I give you a clean inning. Why can't I have Familia start? He gets in trouble. Diaz cleans it up. But they're so afraid of bringing guys in with runners on base, Michael, that they end up having to bring Diaz into a situation just in case. And now he's not available for what could be a save situation tomorrow. Eventually, you're going to get exposed. So why not just have Familia at least start? And maybe you're fortunate enough that he pitches well, and now you don't have to use Diaz. It's all because I got to have him come in a clean inning. Why? You're supposed to be one of the best closers in baseball. So you can't come in with runners at second and third and one out?
To clean up Familia's mess? I was just corrected on Twitter. The average annual value for Stanton's contract is $22.5 million for the Yankees. That's not overpaid. Sorry. Even if he's just a DH. It's not overpaid. Russell in Harlem. Russell.
What's up, Michael, Peter, Don? Michael, I am the most conflicted Yankee fan in the world because I'm a John Carlos Stanton fan and I'm a Gary Sanchez fan.
Okay.
And you're right. There's no way in the world Stanton shouldn't have been in the lineup. No, I mean, no way in the world he should have been out. And, you know, and I don't understand it. Today's athletes are better trained, has a better diet, has flexibility coaches, has better training facilities, but yet they played less than the players in the 60s, the 70s, and 80s. You know, let Stanton be Stanton. Put him in DH. Let him play every day until he gets hurt. There are going to be regular off days. I want to see Stanton play 157 games a year. We've seen what he can do, what he did in Miami. Let him be. And my other one is Gary Sanchez. The Yankees better don't give up on him. I'm tired of hearing that, oh, Higashioka should be in the lineup. No, he shouldn't. He hit 500 when Gary Cole pitches, and when other people pitch, he hit just like Gary Sanchez, the bad guy.
But, Russell, I'll tell you what. He had a huge hit yesterday that drove in the second run, the first run, which was all they needed. And he's a much better catcher than Gary. I'm sorry. Much better. So if he could get that kind of outing out of Kluber, and then he does what he does with Cole, I think they're going to split time. I don't say give up on Gary Sanchez either, but don't tell me that Higashioka shouldn't play. Higashioka's the superior catcher. He just is. And he hits enough that you can live with it. Gary doesn't hit enough to live with his catching. That's why he's splitting time now with Higashioka. We'll talk more about this a little bit later on. Coming up, Dan Orlovsky will break down the Giants and the Jets drafts right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You know what I think is happening? I think he's using the Jeopardy thing as some sort of leverage. I don't think there's any chance that they would give Aaron Rodgers the Jeopardy job. And that's just my gut feeling. I just don't think they will. They still have LeVar Burton, who had a big social media campaign to get him to do a couple of weeks. He's still not even on yet. Ken Jennings has done well, and obviously he seemed like he's the natural choice. I just don't think it's going to be Roger. I think Rogers is smartly using the possibility maybe to force the Packers' hand. There's no way. He's 38, right, Don? There's no way the age of 38 that he wants to sit out this year. There's no way.
He'll be 38 December 2nd.
Right.
I don't know, Michael. People change.
But he wants to play, Don. If he wanted to walk away, I'd be all for it. He wants to play. So if he wants to play, he's giving away his 38th year.
I think he wants to play, but the problem is he doesn't want to play in Green Bay for this year. How badly does he not want to play in Green Bay? And he may be forced to walk away. And once you walk away, because like you said, Michael, yeah, it's not like that year disappears and he becomes a free agent at the end of it.
No, he's still beholden. Yep.
So Green Bay still has to trade him, and he still has a no-trade clause, so he can't say where he's going to go. So that factors into it as well. Now, I watched everybody, okay? I thought Anderson Cooper was very good. He was probably my favorite of the ones that they had so far.
Right.
But it's not up to me. I mean, what were the ratings? Well, maybe for those 2 weeks the ratings were better than the other guys, and maybe that's what they're looking for. Everybody, Dr. Oz, they all did a good job. I mean, they all can do the job. But they're all getting
Dr. Oz
like
got
a week
good ratings.
Or two.
Dr. Oz, a lot of people were violently against Dr. Oz because they said some of his theories and some of the stuff he said, he shouldn't be hosting Jeopardy. So I don't know if Dr. Oz would be in line.
Okay, but these are the guys that all did it.
Right.
And it's not like they're getting the job solely based on how they articulated the questions and all there. Well, it's probably a ratings game too.
Yep.
And maybe Rodgers, maybe those 2 weeks did well. I don't know. I didn't follow it. But that's probably going to be a factor.
Let's go to Michael in South Orange. Michael.
Hey, Don, Michael Peter, what's going on?
How you doing?
I was just going to make a point about Rodgers. And, you know, Michael, you seem to think that, you know, he's maybe kind of like a bluff on him retiring and how like there's more money to be made. And I think you are right, though. He is using it as leverage. I think he sees what, you know, happened with Peyton Manning going to Denver, because I know, I'm pretty sure it was Denver and Vegas maybe were his preferred location. I think he wants that kind of situation. I mean, Denver had the pieces around Peyton Manning. He had
Peyton Manning didn't want to leave Indy. They had Andrew Luck. I mean, and
right,
you know, his neck
right.
was
but
an
I'm
issue.
Saying he wants to be treated that way, you know? Like he wants, you know, I'm sure Peyton Manning had certain things he wanted from them or the proper weapons. And I think, I don't know if you guys touched on it, but that story about them dropping that receiver that he praised like mm-hmm. the day before and then the next day he was gone and he took offense to that, which I think is a little, I mean, kind of ridiculous. But
you know what's weird though, Michael? Yeah, he's complaining yeah. about the weapons that he has around him, right? He won the MVP. How bad were the weapons? And they've only made one offensive pick in the first round in the last 8 years. Well, he's one of the best receivers in football.
But he's got a little Brady envy, right? Not just that Brady went to Tampa and won a Super Bowl, but Brady went to Tampa and became the de facto GM, where everybody right. bowed down at him. Who do you want, Tom? Who do you want? You want Gronk to come out of retirement and come play? All right, we're going to play. You want Brown? We'll go ahead and get you Brown. I think that's what he wants. I think this is an ego thing where Green Bay runs their franchise the way franchises should be run. They're not going to let any player dictate on how things are going to go. He wants to go somewhere where they're going to say, Aaron, who do you want? We'll draft whoever you want. We'll sign whoever you want. I think that's the difference, because you're right. This is a good football team that's going to go out there and win 13, 12, 14 games a year. But he doesn't want to be just another player. He wants to be somebody that's thought of as the difference maker. He gets to make decisions, and that's what Tom got in Tampa, and I think that's what he wants someplace else.
Jason in New Jersey. Jason.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Thanks for taking the call.
You got it. What's up?
I'm a big-time Green Bay Packer fan, and Aaron Rodgers, he's my favorite player of all time in football. But he's always been sort of a drama queen and kind of – this is the kind of guy he is. And he's going to think about it and realize there is no team in the NFL right now that if the Packers – one, they're not trading him. I don't think he's going to get traded. But there's no team that he's going to go to that's better off with him. The Packers have a great O-line – good weapons on offense. The problem always is the defense. That's why they always draft defense. It's always the problem year in and year out.
Great point.
It doesn't make any sense to me why he would want to leave, because they play in the NFC North. There's literally no other team that can compete with them. He's going to walk into the playoffs again, and guess what? He's going to get another shot because they're going to be good again, because the team is still very, very good.
I guess the one team that he would want to go to that I think could do well, Jace, is Denver. Denver's got a good team. And you add him to it, and it might have the effect that Manning had on them. I think they have a good team. I don't think he wouldn't win with the Raiders. I think the Raiders are dysfunctional.
I know I'm a little delusional here, but I do think Washington would be pretty good. I think he could walk right in. He shows up in Washington, guys. They're not the hands-down easy favorite to win the division?
Of course.
You don't see them going 12-5, 13-4
they were
if they get Rodgers?
A playoff team basically without a quarterback for the second half of the season, right?
So I think that could play for him. Having a championship defense, is he good enough to take that team and have them compete? I think Rodgers could go to most teams in the NFC and compete. That's how much of a difference maker I think he is.
What Jason was saying, though, the teams that are good, they have their quarterback. I mean, he wants to go to San Francisco. They've got two quarterbacks now. They're not getting him.
Yeah, well, no, that's over.
Right. So there are a lot of teams where it's over that he wants to go. So, I mean, he seems like he wants to go to the AFC. So that removes him out of the way of Tom, but it puts him right in the way of Patrick Mahomes. So I think he's in a real good situation. He could come out of the NFC and go to the Super Bowl with a little luck.
But again, maybe he's not chasing a ring because he has one. Maybe he just wants a situation where he wants to have fun and get to pick who he wants to play with. Like I said, with Tom, we didn't know Tom was going to win a Super Bowl in Tampa, and I don't know if that necessarily was. Yeah, Tom wants to win a championship. He wanted to get from under the thumb of Bill Belichick and be his guy and Tampa. And it all worked out, and he ended up winning a championship. So maybe we're looking at where he could go to has the best chance to win. Maybe he just wants to go somewhere where he can be the man and make all the decisions and have fun. And
there
not be under the
people.
Structure of, sorry, Aaron, you're a really good player, but you're just like everybody else. We're going to do what we want to do.
Okay,
and
but
you do in spite of what you want to do.
Other than Tom Brady, who's that guy? Tom Brady is better than, I mean, his resume is much better than Rodgers.
Right, but Rodgers right now is a better quarterback than Tom Brady is.
I get it, but what other quarterback is calling the personnel shots on their team? Tom Brady's earned it. He's 43 at six Super Bowls coming in.
Well, whether you think that or not, Rodgers probably thinks, why can't I be that? I'm just coming off an MVP. So why can't I go there and at least have a say? See, the thing at Green Bay is, if you listen to what certain people are saying, it's not so much that he didn't have a say. They didn't even bother to run it by him.
Right.
And that really ticked him off that he wasn't a part of the process. Now, they probably didn't make him part of the process because his answer about drafting Love would have been, no, don't do it.
Right.
But he feels like he's – listen, there are organizations like that, Michael, where they don't think players are special. Go play quarterback. That's your job. I'll be the general manager. I'll be the owner. I'll be the president. And I think that's what insulted him more than anything else.
Go to Polo in Queens. Polo?
Hey, fellas. It's a privilege to talk to you guys.
Thanks.
I wanted to say something to Pete last night on the biography of Macho Man. Such great work there, Pete. Really
Thanks,
great
man.
Work. And one of the best biographies I've seen. And let me tell you something, Macho Man lived a sick, crazy life. And I just want to tell you a great job last night.
Very kind of you, man. Thank you. I was
I'm
happy
seeing
to
a lot
it.
Of this on well, – what is this, Peter? How'd you weasel your way into this? What's going
Again,
on?
Again, I don't weasel my way into things. there's a series of eight WWE A&E biographies. They're running for eight straight weeks. Yesterday was the third one. I think I did three of them. And I shot that a very long time ago.
Like, and you were great in it, from what I'm hearing.
I was very – I'll put it this way. You know, you do these interviews. They last a really long time. You kind of forget what you say. And then you're watching, and you're like, man, I hope I like everything I had to say. I was very pleased with how they used me.
So you loved yourself.
I was just happy. There were a couple things that people said, and I was like, ugh, you should not have said that in an interview. You can get too comfortable talking and forget the context matters. And I was just happy that the stuff that I said put Randy Savage in a positive light because I'm a huge fan of his.
Well done, Peter. And you look great today. I think you changed jackets from the beginning of the show.
I was in a rush. Yeah, that wasn't the jacket I was going to wear, but
because
I did want to wear a
that jacket with your initials on it.
I love the jacket. It just didn't work with this.
This
with
does, though. This, so. This looks like it's 100% gabardine. It's beautiful.
I don't know what gabardine means, but thank you.
1-800-919-3776. More of your phone calls when we get back on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, so the Knicks are playing Memphis tonight. And the reason why that's important, and Ed Cohen pointed this out on Twitter, so I have the exact numbers. The Knicks have won 10 of 11 games, and it all started with 3 minutes and 5 seconds left against Memphis, and the Knicks were down eight. Now, coming into that game, they had lost 5 of 6, and their season was about to spin out of control. Well, the next 8 minutes and 5 seconds define their season. They ended up tying Memphis in regulation and winning in overtime. And then they have just continued to do what they do. So last night they beat the Rockets 112-97.
Wasn't it more than that?
112. Am I wrong?
I think it was 117-97. I thought they won by like 25. I thought it was 122-97.
Okay.
I'm sure it was in the paper. We can look it up.
Yeah,
no, I think it was unreleased.
I'm not a math guy. I can't count or do math.
I know.
122-97.
See,
thank you.
This is why you have me here.
Well, you said 117. So
then
you're
I
wrong.
Fix it. And Don, did I fix it?
You did fix it.
I went to 122.
So. All right, 122-97. So that means their record is 36-28.
That's a real
record.
So it
ensures that they're going to be a 500 team or better for the first time since 2012-2013.
All right.
Here's where we are. Tonight, Memphis. Then after that, Denver. Then Phoenix, then L.A. So they're in fourth place. But they're not just holding on. They're two games up in the loss column over the Hawks and the Heat. In seventh place is Boston. They're three games up in the loss column. In eighth place, the Hornets, and they're five games up in the loss column. They're in great shape. Now, if they could take one of these next four, then you're looking at a 2-3 road trip. I think he could live with that. If they could take two of the next four, then you're looking at a 3-2 road trip, and then I don't think they're going to be in a play-in for sure. I don't think they're going to be in a play-in anyway. And which of these teams, Memphis, Denver, Phoenix, or the Lakers, which one don't you think they have a chance against? I think they have a chance to win any single game that they play. Now, over a longer series, I think some of their weaknesses will be shown. But bottom line, this is a very important stretch for the Knicks. They don't want to go 0-4 in these games because then everybody's going to say that it was just false hope they were selling. But if they could knock off two of these four and go 3-2 on this trip, the last long trip they have, they're in great shape. I give them credit. I really do. And they beat the team that it beat. It's like the Yankees sweeping the Tigers. You don't celebrate it. But I'll tell you what, they'd have gotten ripped if they lost a game. Now, they beat the Rockets. You don't celebrate it, but they'd have gotten ripped if they had not won the game. Julius Randle was able to rest the entire fourth quarter. Obi Toppin got some play. They did very, very well beating a team that they're supposed to beat. 36-28. Vegas had them at 22. How wrong was Vegas? I'm just so happy for them.
Well, think about it. If this is a normal season, right, where the top eight teams in each conference make the playoffs, this team would be closer to the Bucks than falling out of the playoffs altogether.
Yep.
So did you think that that would ever be the case with eight games remaining? They would be four back of the loss column for third. For third. And be seven ahead in the loss column of the ninth place team of the conference. It's just incredible what they've done. Incredible.
It really is.
And yeah, they're going. They're going to the playoffs lock, and now the feeling has to be that holding on to the four seed is feasible because, you know, Atlanta's been 500. Boston's been 500 over the last 10 games. Miami's, won seven of their last 10 and three in a row. They're a threat, but, holding on to the four seed's a possibility.
They haven't been able to get in. Imagine doing that, and they haven't gained any ground on the Knicks. They've lost ground.
Yeah, because the Knicks are 9-1 and 10.
Yeah.
No, it's been unreal. And listen, tonight's tough because Memphis is at home, and it's a second of back-to-backs for the Knicks. But, God, if they won tonight.
Oh, forget it. Just be great. Derrick Rose had a good game as well. Now, quickly about the Nets. That was one of the best games that you'll see this year in the regular season. Nets and Bucks, and the Bucks beat them. And you can see why the Bucks are going to be a tough out in the playoffs. They can play some defense. They made Durant earn every one of his over 40 points. They made Kyrie really work. Now, that's a series. And you could see when you're playing a team that really wants to win, because Milwaukee's trying to catch the Nets for the number two spot, and the Nets are trying to catch Philly for the number one, but Philly leads by half game, which means they lead by a game and a half because they have the tiebreaker. It shows you how much you need James Harden. James Harden puts them over the top. I think it's a fair fight without James Harden.
Well, that's what's scary, right? Is that, they're only missing one of their best players, and yet they still had how many times and how many looks to tie that game late, right? And if I had to be critical, and I know Kyrie's great, but, some of the one look, I mean, can you work for a better three than that? I don't know. Sometimes it's just like, is it just, hey, I feel it, I'm just going to hoist it up? Because I think.
You mean KD shot at the end?
No, the Kyrie shot before that.
Oh, got it. Okay.
The KD shot, it was what it was, but because you're getting down to that last possession. But there was a time before they get, I forget who it was on the Bucks, like missed both free throws to come back down, and he hoisted one. It was like from the logo. I think he could probably just work for a little bit of a better shot. But I guess with these players, when they feel it, they feel it, right? And then they hoist. I think they just showed it now. Well, that was the KD shot that he missed. That was well defended. But it was the shot just before then that I thought they could have, because they had what, like three possessions where they could have tied the game late?
Yeah, and they're going to play them again tomorrow, so it's one of these series that this weird season has set up. So I'm going to keep an eye on that game as well. So the Nets, you know, trying to fine-tune and hope that they get back to Harden. I mean, he was wearing shorts and a sport coat yesterday.
Interesting.
Well, you're running out of road here, right? What, they got 9 games left?
Yeah, they're running out of road.
Is it 9?
I think 8.
Well, the Knicks are 36-28, so that means they played 64.
No, they're
that would be 8.
They're at 65. They're down to 7.
Yeah. So remember when we said, well, we hope that they play 7 games together? Well, that's not going to happen. They might not play any games together down the stretch.
I would think the plan probably at this point, because now if you're only down to a handful, what does it matter, right? So now it's probably just you'll see all 3 together game 1 first round.
Let's go to the phones. Doug in Hempstead. Doug.
Oh, no, Doug.
Take your time.
I'm here. How are you?
Oh, hey.
How are you, Mr. G?
There you
yes.
go. Yep.
Yeah, I'm here. Oh, yeah, I'm here. A great, great show. I really enjoy it. And I have to say, I'm just really happy with the Knicks. I know this ball took a while to move forward like this, but, you know, you got to have faith in the guys. And I will tell you this and say it honestly and earnestly, that there is no one happier for their progress than my brother Steve. He's really happy about what's going on. So I'm just really thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for the guys because a lot of those guys are his guys. And he's just always been a Nick guy. So, you know, didn't work out perfectly for him, but he tried to move it forward and create space and get picks. And, hey, now they're winning. It's great. Great coach, great situation. I'm happy.
Well, wait, Mills is your brother?
Yes, that's me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, he's my old brother.
Oh, yeah, you've called before, right?
I don't know if I called you. I called one or two in the other show, pretty close to that one. I don't know if I've ever called.
Now, I'm curious about this, Doug. I'm curious about this. So they let Steve go, and you're honestly telling me that he's happy that they're doing well?
Oh, absolutely. He's happy. Why wouldn't he be? You know, I was on a call with Billy, and I won't say the GM's name, and another former coach. I'm friends with Kenny Atkinson as well. And Billy said to me, he said, Doug, you know, someone asked you if Steve was upset. Well, let's look at this. It's his GM. Mostly all his players, except everyone told him to get rid of Randall. A couple of new players. And he's been at the Garden for 20 years, only in a few in control of basketball 100%. Why would he be upset? You know, it would be nice to get a second hire, but listen, you're blessed to get an opportunity. It's 30 jobs. You're blessed. You know, we're from Roosevelt. You're down the street from Dr. J, next door to Chuck D, across the street from Eddie Murphy. We're from a pretty good low middle class town. Dad is a great basketball coach. We're a basketball family. We're just happy to have an opportunity.
You know what? That's encouraging to hear. And we're going to have to cut you off, Doug, because the connection was bad. But I've said this before, and people think I'm joking. If I ever got fired, I wouldn't root for the people. I even if I was left behind friends. You think Kenny Atkinson's happy for the Nets? There's no way. They submarined him. Now, in all due respect to Steve Mills, he had a job for a long time at the Garden. A long time. So I think he's still close with Dolan, so maybe that makes him happy for what's going on. But you can't tell me that Kenny Atkinson's happy for what's going on. There's no way. That should be him. That should be his success.
Well, you know, Willie Randolph explained it very well. You can hate on the organization, but, you know, what about the players? There's probably guys there he's very happy for. So how do you separate it? Right? I mean, some of the guys that are, a lot of the guys, most of the guys, you know, became Knicks while he was there. So there's probably a few people he's not rooting to do well, but there's probably a majority of guys he wants to see do well. Atkinson's different because I think he got fired by some of the players you'd have to root for.
Right.
So that's a different story. But, Michael, if you're a manager or you're a general manager or president, you get fired by the organization, but you love the players and you want those players to do well, I mean, how do you root against them?
I just must be wired differently than other human beings. And I've said this before, and you guys always laugh at me and you make fun of me. I love the two of you. Love you. I think we're going to be friends until I'm dead, okay? But if ESPN calls up Ryan Hurley and says, I want Kay fired, and they fire me, I would want this show to tank. Even though I love both of you.
But
because the bigger picture would be, I don't want ESPN to be right for firing me.
But that's still a bad guy.
I guess. That's what I said. Maybe I'm wired differently.
Well, you are right. Because no, but I understand the dilemma you're in. But ultimately, when you see, it's all a. Listen, we're just a spoke in the wheel at ESPN, right?
A very small spoke.
So you would then root for the show to do poorly for something that maybe the company as a whole wouldn't give that much of a time of day to. But meanwhile, the two guys sweating every day to succeed, two people that you're close to, one you've known for 20 years, another guy you've known for five, who would then really feel a loss, really be hurt by the loss, you're going to end up rooting for that to happen so that the company that let you go might have a millisecond of displeasure?
Yes. Yeah.
That's weird.
I know.
Peter, is that weird?
But it's hard. I mean, if you get unceremoniously dismissed, it's different than it coming to a mutual ending, for sure. Now, I don't know if I'd be actively rooting against, especially with us still here, but Michael's a different kind of bird. We all know that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't sit there with, like, you know, a voodoo doll.
No, own it.
I wouldn't actively go out of my way to hope that you don't get ratings, but if you didn't, I'd be thrilled.
Just own it, Michael. You would. I don't know if you believe
a voodoo doll.
But if you did, you would do that. I know you. You're all in on everything you do.
Yeah,
because
I am.
You wouldn't casually root against. You would root against. And but, I know, you know that, but the collateral damage is pretty heavy stuff,
well,
man.
But you know what? But they wouldn't blame you guys. They'd say that I destroyed it. And by the way, everybody, this is really happening. I'm about to get laid off at ESPN. I just want you all to know. But, Peter, if they banged you at Hot 97 and they just kept Ebro and Laura and all of a sudden their ratings go absolutely skyrocket, you love both of them, you'd be happy?
No.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
No, I actually am with Michael on this. I mean, and here's the other thing. You even more important than the ratings skyrocketing, the ego boost you'd get from the ratings dropping a lot would be important. If you leave the show you're on, you want to at least see that show take a hit.
No,
they just keep trucking along like you weren't even there.
No, but let's bring it back to the reality, though. Okay.
Right.
You threw out the phrase unceremoniously, right? Or word.
Okay.
Stephen Mills may think differently, but I don't know if he can say that it was unceremoniously fired.
No, no. Kenny Atkinson was unceremoniously fired.
Steve Mills
like I said, hired Kenny David Atkinson's Fisdale. Different. Sorry.
Because he was also, let's face it, fired by the guys he would literally have to go out there and root for the Nets to win, right? They didn't want him.
Right.
Wasn't like, you know, some bean counter someplace said, you know what, I think it's time to just let Atkinson go. I think we could do this cheaper. No, the players didn't want him. So that's a different story. But in most cases, in your analogy, by rooting for the K-Show to fail, the people that would feel it most are the people that you're closest to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's called collateral damage. I'm sorry.
But collateral damage suggests that those are necessary pieces in order to get to where you need to go.
You'll both work in the business. Don't worry.
After this, though. You want this to tank first.
Then I would actively help you guys wherever you went next.
And listen, Michael isn't asking for a third to tenth drop. He wants there to be an article written about how literally no one was listening, Peter.
No, I would want you guys to drop to like 26, so then the lead-in for Carlin, and Carlin would be destroyed because of that, because of the 26th place lead-in. I'd want it to be a whole, like, domino effect.
Honestly, the people that would be affected by this.
I'm sorry.
Including your boy toy, Rick DiPietro.
Yeah, yeah.
Think well, Rick's the, like, it's Rick's like 100 the least one to worry years about. Of people that you know.
Rick's the least to worry about. He's very well financially taken care of.
Right.
That's the last guy to worry.
But
remember, Canty would probably be the second guy.
Right.
Bart would be the third guy. And you all saved your money. You're all good.
Really?
Why is everything about money with you? Why do I want this scarlet letter of failure on my resume?
This is
he should have supported him when they got rid of Michael.
So I got to walk when you know what? That's what I'll do, Michael. It'll be like Jerry Maguire. I'll follow you right out.
Well, isn't that what I told them when they always said Don's not that important? I said, you crazy? And they were hinted that they wanted to get rid of you. I said, well, then I'm gone too. Didn't I do that?
You did do that.
So?
Now, then, would you have done that? Would you have? You threatened
yes,
it, but would you have done it?
Absolutely. I've said, well, then, you know what? If then you then I have ever no got fired, right?
Even though the financial structure is much different, and I have two new family members since then.
But I would tell
you,
you
know what?
To.
If anything happened to you, I'm walking. If that's the message I'm sending out right now to management. I'll send out an email. You want a mass email? Just to let you know, if you ever let Michael go, you're letting go of both.
By the way, I want you to send that, Don. And I don't want it to be local. I want it to be company-wide.
Let's put it this way, Don.
I want SVP to read it. I want Sage Steele to read it. I want Orlovsky to read it.
Is there a way I can...
Do you want Pitaro to read it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
There must
yeah.
have been a mass email that has been sent to me recently. And I'll just reply all.
Hey, everyone. Don LaGreca in New York here. Just wanted to give a heads up that if Michael Kay is ever relieved of his duties, I'm walking.
You want to know what a friend is? You want to know what a reaction would be?
Do you want to know what a friend is? Rick DiPietro just texted me. He said, I'd leave with you. Bleep them all.
Well, he's lying to you.
I bet you he's not lying.
That's because
he does this job because he loves it and he has fun, but he's not paying his bills with this job.
But what if he was paying his bills like I am?
Well, we don't know. Well, Don.
Wait, and so he would walk out on the team that he works with every day to support his buddy who's on another show?
Yeah, that's the way it works. Let's go to Dan in New Jersey. Danny?
How's it going, guys?
Great. How are you?
There.
I'm pretty good. I enjoyed that whole conversation. Interesting.
Thank you.
Two things. Two, I've been watching a lot of list videos lately. It's the list that you guys made last year. And I don't know if you guys have ever done a top five callers in the Michael Kay Show history, but I think that would be a fun list to watch.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. We have not done that list.
That would hurt a lot of feelings, I got to be honest with you.
Well, Ray from North Carolina would be in the top five.
Yeah, I've watched that Ray call and I've laughed hysterically all the time.
It's a great call. You.
I'm laughing now. But I wanted to talk about the Yankees and Kyle Higashioka. I really think that he needs to be their starting catcher moving forward.
Why do you say that? Because how Kluber and Cole pitch?
Not only that, it's that his offense has really been on par with Sanchez for most of this year. Mm-hmm. And
well,
his defense
Dan,
is a complete upgrade.
I can't say that it's not in play, Dan. I can't say it's not in play. But they do have a lot of man hours invested in Gary in years. And they still believe that there's something in there. But Kyle's a better defensive catcher. And his offense is good enough that you can carry it if he has such a positive effect on the pitchers. Now, I always give the stat on the games. When he's catching Cole, he's close to a 400 hitter. When he's not, the numbers are much lower. But most of the catching he did before Cole, he had just gotten called up. I think it's apples to wrenches. I think he's a much better hitter now than when those numbers are accumulated. So I think you're going to see him catch probably 3 out of 5 days. I really do. I think Gary will catch 2 days out of the 5, and Higashioka will catch Cole and Kluber and maybe slip him in there for another starter that they think needs his brand of defense behind the plate. But I don't think they're just going to say Gary Sanchez is not the starting catcher anymore. I think they're too shrewd for that. But just watch what they do, not what they say. See how much Kyle catches. But I think you're going to see him catch 3 out of 5 pitchers.
But if you got to the point where he's catching 3 out of 5 days,
then he's the starter.
Then he's the starter. So are you then trading Gary? Because I don't know if Gary fits as the backup catcher of the Yankees. So what do you do with Gary then?
Well, they don't have another catcher in their system right now until Chirinos is healthy. I think you're paying Gary $6.5 million this year. I don't think he's going anywhere. So I think you keep him. And that as you're saying, I know what you're saying, Don. He's not the prototypical backup catcher,
right?
Because he's not a defensive whiz. So,
and there's also not a lot of value of paying a backup catcher that kind of money.
Well, you're still paying him anyway, is what I'm saying, so.
But you might find another organization that believes in him.
not taking $6.5 million. You'd have to eat some money. Gary's going to end up catching, I believe, Montgomery and Tyone. And Tyone pitched very well with Gary behind the plate on Saturday. Very well. Mm. And Montgomery's pitched well all year. So I think you're going to get Kluber, Herman, and Cole with Higashioka, and then probably Monty and Tyone with Gary. And it's all subject to change, too, day game after night game, whichever way it splits. But I think the one guy you know that Higgy's always going to catch is going to be Cole. I mean, the guy, you know, he's heading toward a Cy Young Award the way he's pitching. 1-800-919-3776. The calls are lined up.
Yeah.
Executives are texting us now. Would you leave if Rick was fired? All
great
that stuff.
Question.
If he was fired for no reason, yeah, I think I might.
What if he was fired for cause?
Well, I would say, see you, Rick.
But it was a cause
you
disagreed
with. I'm the one who said
with.
That I would turn my sister in if she committed a crime. So if you're fired for cause, why would
well,
I leave
well,
with
but
you?
What if the cause
what if it's a cause
deal?
You don't agree with?
You
just got a little
that,
blue.
I'd have to take that on a cause-by-cause basis.
Because that's how Rick's going to go, is because he got too blue.
I don't think I would leave if he got blue and got taken off the air, no. But if they said, listen, we're just making a change and you're out, I think I'd go.
So what
you
if
the feeling, Peter, he's itching to go?
What if they said, Rick, we love you.
Right.
But the station is really low on money. You're rich. We want you to stay, but you got to take a severe pay cut. And then he left. Would you go with him?
Well, then I would step up and go, well, let me go, because that would solve all your money problems, because I make a truckload. So just get rid of
so
me
you just
and then everybody could
so,
stay.
So, Don, you're right. You just said it. He just wants to leave. you could just retire right now.
I still have the Yankee gig. I'm not retiring.
Well, I mean, retire from this.
No,
bye,
no.
Buddy. The only... Have a great life.
I love this job. I love working with you guys.
Sometimes like he's got a lot
much.
More in common with Aaron Rodgers than
I'll tell you what, though. I'm going to let this all out on the air. Agreeing to the 4.5 hours, big mistake.
You're
wear
tired.
Me out. Oh, my God. Starting at 2 o'clock, wearing me out. I don't know how long this goes on. I'm Sully. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So there, it's funny how this comes up, Peter, and it's kidding on the square.
No. This isn't even kidding. 4.5 hours is a
no,
beast.
I mean, just the whole, like, itching to go is kidding on the square.
That is kidding on the square.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a brief timeout as I kid on the square right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both. For over 75 years. You hear what I said? 75.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's go right to the phones. A lot of people are waiting, Peter.
Okay.
Let's go to Eric in Westport. Eric.
I'll wait forever for you guys.
Thank
Michael,
you.
Can you confirm that if you leave ESPN, it would be to go host Jeopardy?
Wow.
You know, I'm being considered now. Yeah, I am being considered. If Yes gives me the time, the 70 days to do it. Kidding aside, Eric, I couldn't host it. There's no way I could read those big words and the accents or whatever. There's no way.
Hey, if it's a matter of time, I guess any of the Yankees could probably have time to do Jeopardy.
So they rest and then,
off.
Yeah, they do 10 shows. Okay. Go on, Eric.
Just quick, I went to school with college with Orlovsky. He does really good call on your show. Hopefully he'll get to top caller status soon, or top guest status, I should say.
He's up
and
there.
Then my baseball point is I called – well, you guys talked about it last week. I haven't heard any bad Lindor calls, you know, after an 0-for-5 yesterday, they still won, so I guess people don't care, but his contract is $341 million, and I thought that was, that has something to do with Tatis, right, who got $340
has everything
million.
To do with it, yep.
It's, yeah, so I think, I'm not a Mets fan, but I'm a huge baseball fan. I love watching, like, the new crop of players, the Sotos, the Tatis, Acuna. And I think Lindor, even though he's a little bit older than those guys, not a little bit, he's older than those guys, he gets grouped into that group. And of those players I just named, he is the least, I don't want to say the least talented, but he's doing the worst out of those players. And I think, I'm not a Mets fan, okay, but as a casual fan, I'm comparing him and his salary because he got $1 million more than Tatis. And I'm thinking, like, oh, my God, I'd way rather have Tatis. And I don't think – you're right, and you've said before, who cares about the money? I'm not signing the check. And Steve Cohen has plenty of money. But I'm comparing him to Tatis, and I'm saying, oh, he's not even close to living up to his expectations. Okay, yeah, it's 20 games, but even over the last year, even last year.
Yeah, but there's a lot of caveats in here, Eric. Number one, he's paid way more than Tatis. Tatis's contract is $340 for 14 years, and Lindor's is $341 for 10. So Tatis is not averaging $34 million a year. That's number one. Number two, Tatis could not have been a free agent for another 5 years. Not available. Not available. Lindor would have been a free agent at the end of this year. So he would have gone on the open market. You would have had a bid against all the other 29 teams, the ones that would want him. And what would the price be? I'm not sure. And to say that he's not as good as the other players, boy, take a look at his WAR. I mean, WAR is a pretty comprehensive stat, and his WAR is outstanding. Now, as Don has noted, last year he didn't play well. First month of the season, he's been putrid. But this is not an average player. This is a great player. Look at his WAR.
Well, nobody looks. You know, the fan isn't considering WAR.
But I'm just telling them, when you say that he's not on that level, he is on that level.
All right. So, but even more the reaction, because he is on that level. And listen, San Diego isn't tearing it up this year. Okay, I mean they're good. They're above 500, but they're not tearing it up. But Tatis is, and there's a feeling around him that it's a special player, and he's lifting the team, and I think Met fans expected that from Lindor, and through the first 22 games, it hasn't happened. He's batting 171, and the Mets are 500. So I understand their frustration. I don't think it's breaking down WAR or comparing him to Tatis. It's just there is a level of expectation that has not been met yet, and now he's become the whipping boy.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to Ryan in Lake George. Ryan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm a big fan of the show.
Thanks.
Good. Doing good. I was looking forward to tomorrow night's game against the Astros, and I've been thinking about it, talking to my friends about it with the pitching staff. Will one of the Yankees pitchers make the throw at a Nashville player, and do you think it would be Herman tomorrow night?
I see. I don't think they should, Ryan. I mean, it was years ago. You're not going to get
think
it back.
So either.
The best way you could go about it, Ryan, is you got to win these games. Win the games. So, I mean, you're going to throw at hitters? What does that solve? I don't condone that at all. I think it's an awful idea. Now, if they go up and in on you, and then, you know, you've got some residual buildup, I guess you could do it, but under no condition should they throw. Yeah, they're crazy.
If they go up and in on the Yankees, then something's going to happen.
Yeah, but I just
that would be wild.
Yeah, I don't think like why would Herman do it? I mean, if anything, the guy that was victimized is Chapman.
Yeah, but
why would he do it if he's trying to close a game? I don't think it's wise at all.
See, I could see a scenario where, you know, Chapman might want to get his pound of flesh, but when you consider the stressful situation, he's going to come in and close out a game, 3-2 Yankees. You know, top of the ninth inning, is that a good idea to hit an Astro and bring the go-ahead run to the plate? No. And if it's 10-0, he's not in the game.
I don't think you hit any of them. I just don't. You don't hit any of them.
Well,
one of them might be your teammate one day, the guy you decide to hit. They used to hate Roger Clemens, then he became a Yankee, and they loved him.
Well, that's not a reason not to do it, though.
Okay, the reason but not there's to do no it. Reason to do it.
I agree.
You're not going to get back that year.
I know, but you could understand in a situation where you're like, boy, I'd love to hit Altuve right here. Right between the numbers.
Well, you know what you do then? Judge is on first base. He's the one who got screwed out of an MVP, right? Ground ball is short, double play. You knock him into left field. That's what you do within the confines of the game. But throwing at somebody, that's dumb.
I mean, it's dumb, but it happens. You know, yeah. And it usually happens at a moment where the game is already decided and you're not headhunting. You hit him in the butt, you hit him between the numbers in the back, and then, all right, they just letting you know that, you know, I didn't forget that what you did. It's not right, but it happens. Look what happened between the Mets and the Phillies.
I mean,
that's going back to last year when Dominic Smith was yelling, and it's not, these players don't forget. And they get their moments. Either it's hitting somebody, or or yelling at him after you strike him out. Either way, he still gets suspended. I mean, and quite frankly, Michael, sitting back, they could be entertaining. Nobody should get hit in the head. But if there's a little back and forth these next 3 days, I think that'd be fun.
I don't think it'd be fun if they start hitting people.
Well, not hitting in the head.
Anywhere. It doesn't. I don't think it solves anything. Conceal your signs better. I'm not saying the Yankees are at fault, but the Astros were definitely at fault. Major League Baseball decided not to punish them.
Right.
Now you're going to have frontier justice and punish them yourself?
But you're explaining away the whole thing, but we know it happens.
Right. I don't think it's going to happen. The Yankees are trying to win games. They're at 500 right now. All of a sudden, they're going to get into a beanball war with the Astros? No, I don't think it's a smart
thing. That would be silly. I'm just saying that if we get to Thursday, all right, two games have already been played. It's 10-0 in the eighth. It could happen.
We'll see. I don't think it will happen. Could it happen? Yeah. I think it would be dumb if it did, but we'll see. 1-800-919-3776. A lot more show to go. Joe Douglas, the Jets GM, who many people are praising as having done a great job, he is going to join us at 5 o'clock. And then Joe Judge, the coach of the Giants, will join us at 5:30. The K-Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.